he found that he was alone in the burrow. For a moment, he wondered whether Heisenthley had been arrested. Then he felt sure that the Auslafa could not have removed her while he slept. She must have woken and slipped back to Thuthuthunang without disturbing him. It was a little before dawn, but the oppression in the air had not lessened. He slipped up the run to the entrance. Moneywort, the sentry on duty, was peering uneasily out of the mouth of the hole, but turned as he approached.
"I wish it would rain, sir," he said. "The thunder's enough to turn the grass sour, but not much hope of it breaking before the evening, I'd say."
"It's bad luck for the marks last day on dawn and evening," replied Bigwig. "Go and wake Captain Chervil. I'll take your place here until the mark come up."
When Moneywort had gone, Bigwig sat in the mouth of the hole and sniffed the heavy air. The sky seemed as close as the tops of the trees, covered with still cloud and flushed on the morning side with a lurid, foxy glow. Not a lark was up, not a thrush singing. The field before him was empty and motionless. The longing to run came over him. In less than no time, he could be down to the arch. It was a safe bet that Campion and his patrol would not be out in weather like this. Every living creature up and down the fields and copses must be muted, pressed down as though under a great soft paw. Nothing would be moving, for the day was unpropitious and instincts were blurred and not to be trusted. It was a time to crouch and be silent. But a fugitive would be safe. Indeed, he could not hope for a better chance. "O Lord with the starlight ears, send me a sign," said Bigwig. He heard movement in the run behind him. It was the Auslafa bringing up the prisoner. In the thundery twilight, Blackavar looked more sick and dejected than ever. His nose was dry, and the whites of his eyes showed. Bigwig went out into the field, pulled a mouthful of clover, and brought it back.
"Cheer up," he said to Blackavar. "Have some clover."
"That's not allowed, sir,"
said one of the escort.
"Oh, let him have it, Bartier," said the other. "There's no one to see. It's hard enough for everyone on a day like this, let alone the prisoner."
Blackavar ate the clover, and Bigwig took up his usual place as Chervil arrived to watch the mark go out. The rabbits were slow and hesitant, and Chervil himself seemed unable to rise to his usual brisk manner. He had little to say as they passed him. He let both Thuthuthunang and Heisenthley go by in silence. Nelthilter, however, stopped of her own accord and stared impudently at him.
"Under the weather, Captain," she said. "Brace up now. You may have a surprise soon. Who knows?"
"What do you mean?" answered Chervil sharply.
"Does might grow wings and fly," said Nelthilter. "And before very much longer, too. Secrets go faster than moles underground."
She followed the other does into the field. For a moment, Chervil looked as though he were going to call her back.
"I wonder whether you could have a look at my off hind foot," said Bigwig. "I think I've got a thorn in it."
"Come on, then," said Chervil. "Outside. Not that we'll be able to see much better there."
But whether because he was still thinking about what Nelthilter had said, or for some other reason, he did not make a particularly thorough search for the thorn, which was perhaps as well, for there was no thorn there.
"Oh, confound it," he said, looking up. "There's that dratted white bird again. What's it keep coming here for?"
"Why does it worry you?" asked Bigwig. "It's not doing any harm. Only looking for snails."
"Anything out of the ordinary is a possible source of danger," replied Chervil, quoting Woundwort. "And you keep away from it today, Thlaley. Do you see? That's an order."
"Oh, very well," said Bigwig. "But surely you know how to get rid of them. I thought all rabbits knew that."
"Don't be ridiculous. You're not suggesting attacking a bird that size with a beak as thick as my front paw?"
No, no, it's a sort of a charm thing that my mother taught me. You know, like, ladybird, fly away home. That works, and so does this. What it always used to with my mother.
The ladybird thing only works because all ladybirds crawl to the top of the stem and then fly.
Well, all right, said Bigwig. Have it your own way. But you don't like the bird, and I've offered to get rid of it for you. We had a lot of these charms and sayings in my old warren. I only wish we had one to get rid of men.
Well, what is the charm?
Said Chervil. You say, I fly away, great bird, so white, and don't come back until tonight. Of course, you'll have to use hedgerow talk. No use expecting them to understand Lapine. Let's have a go anyway. If it doesn't work, we're none the worse, and if it does, the mark will think it was you who drove the bird away. Where's it got to? I can hardly see anything in this light. Oh, there it is. Look, behind those thistles. Well, you run like this. Now you have to hop to this side, then to the other side, scratch with your legs. That's right, splendid. Cock your ears, and then go straight on until... Ah, here we are. Now then. Oh, fly away, great bird so white, and don't come back until tonight. There you are, you see. It did work. I think there's more than we know to some of these old rhymes and spells. Of course, it might have been just going to fly away anyway, but you must admit it's gone.
Probably all that prancing about as we came up to it,
said Chervil sourly.
We must have looked completely mad.
What on earth will the mark think?
Anyway, now we're out here, we may as well go round the sentries.
I'll stop and feed if you don't mind, said Bigwig. I didn't get much last night, you know. Bigwig's luck was not altogether out. Later that morning, quite unexpectedly, he came upon a chance to talk to Blackavar alone. He had been through the sweltering burrows, finding everywhere quick breathing and feverish pulses, and he was just wondering whether he could not plausibly go and press Chervil to ask the council's permission for the mark to spend part of the day in the bushes above ground, for that might very well bring some sort of opportunity with it, when he began to feel the need to pass Hraka. No rabbit passes Hraka underground, and, like schoolchildren who know that they cannot very well be refused a request to go to the lavatory as long as it is not too soon after the last time, the Ephrathan rabbits used to slip into the ditch for a breath of air and a change of scene. Although they were not supposed to be allowed to go more often than was necessary, some of the Ausla were easier than others. As Bigwig approached the hole that led into the ditch, he found two or three young bucks loitering in the run, and as usual, set himself to act his part as convincingly as he could.
"Why are you hanging about here?" he asked.
"The prisoner's escort are up at the hole, and they turned us back, sir,"
answered one.
"They're not letting anyone out for the moment."
"Not to pass Hraka?" said Bigwig.
"No, sir."
Indignant, Bigwig made his way to the mouth of the hole. Here he found Blackavar's escort talking to the sentry on duty.
"I'm afraid you can't go out for the moment, sir," said Bartzia. "The prisoner's in the ditch, but he won't be long."
"Neither shall I," said Bigwig. "Just get out of the way, will you?"
He pushed Bartzia to one side and hopped into the ditch. The day had become even more lowering and overcast. Blackavar was squatting a little way off under an overhanging plume of cow parsley. The flies were walking on his shreds of ears, but he seemed not to notice them. Bigwig went along the ditch and squatted beside him.
"Blackavar, listen," he said quickly. "This is the truth by Frith and the Black Rabbit. I'm a secret enemy of Ephrafa. No one knows this, but you and a few of the Mark Does. I'm going to escape with them tonight, and I'm going to take you as well. Don't do anything yet. When the time comes, I'll be there to tell you. Just brace up and get yourself ready."
Without waiting for an answer, he moved away as though to find a better spot. Even so, he was back at the hole before Blackavar, who evidently meant to stay outside for as long as the escort, clearly in no hurry themselves, would allow.
"Sir," said Bartzia as Bigwig came in, "that's the third time, sir, that you've disregarded my authority.
Council police can't be treated in this way. I'm afraid I shall have to report it, sir.
Bigwig made no reply and returned up the run.
Wait a bit longer if you can, he said as he passed the bucks.
I don't suppose that poor fellow will get out again today.
He wondered whether to go and look for Heisenthley, but decided that it would be prudent to keep away from her. She knew what to do, and the less they were seen together, the better. His head ached in the heat, and he wanted only to be alone and quiet. He went back to his burrow and slept.
Chapter 38 The Thunder Breaks. Why now blow wind, swell billow and swim bark? The storm is up, and all is on the hazard. Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. Late in the afternoon, it came on dark and very close. It was plain that there would be no true sunset. On the green path by the river bank, Hazel sat fidgeting as he tried to imagine what might be going on in Ephrapha.
He told you he wanted you to attack the sentries while the rabbits were feeding, didn't he?
He said to Kahar.
And that he'd bring the mothers out in the confusion.
Yeah, say this, but not happen. Then he say, go away, come again tonight.
So that's still what he means to do. The question is, when will they be feeding? It's getting dark already. Silver, what do you think?
If I know them, they won't alter anything they usually do, said Silver.
But if you're worried in case we're not there in time, why not go now?
Because they're always patrolling. The longer we wait up there, the greater the risk. If a patrol finds us before Bigwig comes, it won't be just a matter of getting ourselves away. They'll realize we're there for some purpose and give the alarm, and that'll be the end of any chance he's got.
Listen, Hazelrah, said Blackberry. We ought to reach the Iron Road at the same time as Bigwig, and not a moment before. Why don't you take them all over the river now, and wait in the undergrowth near the boat? Once Kahar's attacked the sentries, he can fly back and tell us.
Yes, that's it, answered Hazel. But once he's told us, we must get up there in no time at all. Bigwig's going to need us as well as Kahar.
Well, you won't be able to dash up to the arch, said Fiver. With your leg, the best thing you can do is to get on the boat and have the rope gnawed half through by the time we come back. Silver can look after the fighting if there's going to be any.
Hazel hesitated.
But some of us are probably going to get hurt. I can't stay behind.
Fiver's right, said Blackberry. You will have to wait on the boat, Hazel. We can't risk you being left to be picked up by the Ephrathans. Besides, it's very important that the rope should be half gnawed. That's a job for someone sensible. It mustn't break too soon, or we're all finished.
It took them some time to persuade Hazel. When at last he agreed, he was still reluctant.
If Bigwig doesn't come tonight, he said, I shall go and find him, wherever he is. Frith knows what may have happened already.
As they set off up the left bank, the wind began to blow in fitful warm gusts, with a multifoliate rustling through the sedges. They had just reached the plank bridge when there came a rumble of thunder. In the intense, strange light, the plants and leaves seemed magnified, and the fields beyond the river very near. There was an oppressive stillness.
You know, Hazelrah, said Bluebell, this really is the funniest evening I've ever gone looking for a doe.
It's going to get a lot funnier soon, said Silver. There'll be lightning and pouring rain. For goodness sake, all of you, don't panic, or we'll never see our warren again. I think this is going to be a rough business, he added quietly to Hazel. I don't like it much.
Bigwig woke to hear his name repeated urgently.
Thlaley! Thlaley! Wake up, Thlaley!
It was Heisenthley.
What is it? He said. What's the matter?
Nelfilter's been arrested.
Bigwig leapt to his feet. How long ago? How did it happen?
Just now. Moneywort came down to our burrow and told her to come up to Captain Chervil at once. I followed them up the run. When she got to Chervil's burrow, there were two council police waiting just outside,
and one of them said to Chervil, "Well, as quick as you can, and don't be long." And then they took her straight out. They must have gone to the council. Oh, Thleri, what shall we do? She'll tell them everything.
"Listen to me," said Bigwig. "There's not a moment to lose. Go and get the Thuthanang and the others and bring them up to this burrow. I shan't be here, but you must wait quietly until I come back. It won't be long. Quick now! Everything depends on it."
Heisenthley had hardly disappeared down the run when Bigwig heard another rabbit approaching from the opposite direction.
"Who's there?" he said, turning swiftly.
"Chervil," answered the other. "I'm glad you're awake. Listen, Thleri, there's going to be a whole lot of trouble. Now, Filter's been arrested by the council. I was sure she would be after my report to Vervain this morning. Whatever it was she was talking about, they'll get it out of her. I dare say the general will be here himself as soon as he knows what's what. Now, look here. I've got to go over to the council burrow at once. You and Avens are to stay here and get the sentries on duty immediately. There'll be no Silflay, and no one is to go outside for any reason whatever. All the holes are to be double-guarded. Now, you understand these orders, don't you?"
"Have you told Avens?"
"I haven't time to go looking for Avens. He's not in his burrow. Go and alert the sentries yourself. Send someone to find Avens, and someone else to tell Bartzia that Blackava won't be wanted this evening. Then sit on those holes, and the Hraka holes too, with every sentry you've got. For all I know, there may be some plot to make a breakout. We arrested Nelfilter as quietly as we could, but the Mark are bound to realise what's happened. If necessary, you're to get rough, d'you see? Now, I'm off."
"Right," said Bigwig. "I'll get busy at once." He followed Chervil to the top of the run. The sentry at the hole was Marjoram. As he stood clear to let Chervil pass, Bigwig came up behind him and looked out into the overcast.
"Did Chervil tell you?" he said. "Silflay's early tonight, on account of the weather. The orders are that we are to get on with it at once."
He waited for Marjoram's reply. If Chervil had already told him that no one was to go out, it would be necessary to fight him. But after a moment, Marjoram said,
"Have you heard any thunder yet?"
"Get on with it at once, I said," answered Bigwig. "Go down and get Blackavar and the escort up, and be quick too. We'll need to get the Mark out immediately if they're to feed before the storm breaks."
Marjoram went, and Bigwig hurried back to his own burrow. Heisenthley had lost no time. Three or four does were crammed into the burrow itself, and nearby, in a side run, the Thuthanang was crouching with several more. All were silent and frightened, and one or two were close to the stupefaction of terror.
"This is no time to go tharm," said Bigwig. "Your lives depend on doing as I say. Listen, now. Blackavar and the police guards will be up directly. Marjoram will probably come up behind them, and you must find some excuse to keep him talking. Soon after, you'll hear fighting, because I'm going to attack the police guards. When you hear that, come up as fast as you can and follow me out into the field. Don't stop for anything."
As he finished speaking, he heard the unmistakable sound of Blackavar and the guards approaching. Blackavar's weary, dragging gait was like that of no other rabbit. Without waiting for the doe to reply, Bigwig returned to the mouth of the run. The three rabbits came up in single file, Bartzia leading.
"I'm afraid I've brought you up here for nothing," said Bigwig. "I've just been told the Silflay's cancelled for this evening. Have a look outside, and you'll see why."
As Bartzia went to look out of the hole, Bigwig slipped quickly between him and Blackavar.
"Well, it looks very stormy, certainly," said Bartzia, "but I shouldn't have thought—"
"Now, Blackavar!" cried Bigwig, and leapt on Bartzia from behind. Bartzia fell forward out of the hole with Bigwig on top of him. He was not a member of the Auslafa for nothing, and was reckoned a good fighter.
As they rolled over on the ground, he turned his head and sank his teeth in Bigwig's shoulder. He had been trained to get a grip at once and to hold it at all costs. More than once in the past, this had served him well. But in fighting a rabbit of Bigwig's strength and courage, it proved a mistake. His best chance would have been to keep clear and use his claws. He retained his hold like a dog, and Bigwig, snarling, brought both his own back legs forward, sank his feet in Bartzia's side, and then, ignoring the pain in his shoulder, forced himself upward.
He felt Bartia's closed teeth come tearing out through his flesh, and then he was standing above him as he fell back on the ground, kicking helplessly. Bigwig leaped clear. It was plain that Bartia's haunch was injured. He struggled, but could not get up.
"Think yourself lucky," said Bigwig, bleeding and cursing, "that I don't kill you."
Without waiting to see what Bartia would do, he jumped back into the hole. He found Blackova grappling with the other guard. Just beyond them, Eisenflay was coming up the run with the Thuthanang behind her. Bigwig gave the guard a tremendous cuff on the side of the head, which knocked him clear across the run and into the prisoner's alcove. He picked himself up, panting, and stared at Bigwig without a word.
"Don't move," said Bigwig. "There'll be worse to come if you do. Blackavar, are you all right?"
"Yes, sir," said Blackavar. "But what do we do now?"
"Follow me," said Bigwig. "All of you, come on!"
He led the way out again. There was no sign of Bartia, but as he looked back to make sure that the others were following, he caught a glimpse of the astonished face of Avens peering out of the other hole.
"Captain Chervil wants you,"
he called, and dashed away into the field. As he reached the clump of thistles where he had spoken to Kahar that morning, a long roll of thunder sounded from across the valley beyond. A few great warm drops of rain were falling. Along the western horizon, the lower clouds formed a single purple mass, against which distant trees stood out minute and sharp. The upper edges rose into the light, a far land of wild mountains. Copper-coloured, weightless and motionless, they suggested a glassy fragility like that of frost. Surely, when the thunder struck them again, they would vibrate, tremble and shatter, till warm shards, sharp as icicles, fell flashing down from the ruins. Racing through the ochre light, Bigwig was impelled by a frenzy of tension and energy. He did not feel the wound in his shoulder. The storm was his own. The storm would defeat Efrafa. He was well out into the great field and looking for a sight of the distant arch when he felt along the ground the first stamping thuds of the alarm. He pulled up and looked about him. There did not seem to be any stragglers. The does, however many they were well up with him, but scattered to either side. Rabbits in flight tend to keep away from each other, and the does had opened out as they left the hole. If there was a patrol between him and the iron road, they would not get past it without loss, unless they came closer together. He would have to collect them, despite the delay. Then another thought came to him. If they could get out of sight, their pursuers might be puzzled, for the rain and the failing light would make tracking difficult. The rain was falling faster now, and the wind was rising. Over on the evening side, a hedge ran down the length of the field toward the iron road. He saw Blackavar nearby and ran across to him.
"I want everyone the other side of that hedge," he said. "Can you get hold of some of them and bring them that way?"
Bigwig remembered that Blackavar knew nothing except that they were on the run. There was no time to explain about Hazel and the river.
"Go straight to that ash tree in the hedge," he said, "and take all the does you can pick up on the way. Get through to the other side, and I'll be there as soon as you are."
At this moment, Eisenflay and Thuthanang came running toward them, followed by two or three other does. They were plainly confused and uncertain.
"The stamping thleli," panted Thuthanang. "They're coming."
"Well, run then," said Bigwig. "Keep near me, all of you."
They were better runners than he had dared to hope. As they made for the ash tree, more does fell in with them, and it seemed to him that they ought now to be a match for a patrol, unless it were a very strong one. Once through the hedge, he turned south, and keeping close beside it, led them down the slope. There, ahead of him, was the arch in the overgrown embankment. But would Hazel be there, and where was Kahar?
"Well, and what was to happen after that, Nethilda?" asked General Wentworth. "Make sure you tell us everything, because we know a good deal already. Let her alone, Velvine," he added. "She can't talk if you keep cuffing her, you fool."
"Eisenflay said, she said a big bird would attack the Owsler sentries,"
gasped Nethilda.
"And we would run away in the confusion. And then..."
"She said a bird would attack the sentries,"
interrupted Woundwort, puzzled. Are you telling the truth? What sort of a bird?
I don't know,
panted Nelfilta.
The new officer. She said he had told the bird.
What do you know about a bird? Said Woundwort, turning to Chervil.
I reported it, sir, replied Chervil. You'll not forget, sir, that I reported the bird. There was a scuffling outside the crowded council burrow, and Evans came pushing his way in.
The new officer, sir,
he cried.
He's gone, taken a crowd of the marked does with him. Jumped on Bartzia and broke his leg, sir. Blackavar's cut and run, too. We never had a chance to stop them. Goodness knows how many have joined him. Thlaeli, it's Thlaeli's doing.
Thlaeli, cried Woundwort. Imbria Frith, I'll blind him when I catch him. Chervil, Vervain, Evans. Yes, and you too as well. Come with me. Which way has he gone?
He was going downhill, sir,
answered Evans. Lead the way you saw him take, said Woundwort.
As they came out from the Crixa, two or three of the Efrifin officers checked at the sight of the murky light and increasing rain. But the sight of the general was more alarming still. Pausing only to stamp the escape alarm, they set out behind him toward the iron road. Very soon they came upon traces of blood, which the rain had not yet washed away, and these they followed toward the ash tree in the hedge to the west of the warren. Bigwig came out from the further side of the railway arch, sat up and looked round him. There was no sign either of Hazel or of Kahar. For the first time since he had attacked Bartzia, he began to feel uncertain and troubled. Perhaps, after all, Kahar had not understood his cryptic message that morning, or had some disaster overtaken Hazel and the rest. If they were dead, scattered, if there was no one left alive to meet him, he and his does would wander about the fields until the patrols hunted them down. No, it shan't come to that, said Bigwig to himself. At the worst, we can cross the river and try to hide in the woodland. Confound this shoulder! It's going to be more nuisance than I thought. Well, I'll try to get them down to the plank bridge at least. If we're not overtaken soon, perhaps the rain will discourage whoever's after us, but I doubt it. He turned back to the does waiting under the arch. Most of them looked bewildered. Eisenthlay had promised that they were to be protected by a great bird, and that the new officer was going to work a secret trick to evade the pursuit, a trick which would defeat even the general. These things had not happened. They were wet through. Runnels of water were trickling through the arch from the uphill side, and the bare earth was beginning to turn into mud. Ahead of them, there was nothing to be seen but a track leading through the nettles into another wide and empty field.
Come on, said Bigwig. It's not far now, and then we'll all be safe. This way!
All the rabbits obeyed him at once. There was something to be said for effort and discipline, thought Bigwig grimly, as they left the arch and met the force of the rain. Along one side of the field, beside the elms, farm tractors had pounded a broad, flat path downhill toward the water meadow below. That same path up which he had run 3 nights before, after he had left Hazel by the boat. It was turning muddy now, unpleasant going for rabbits, but at least it led straight to the river and was open enough for Kahar to spot them if he should turn up. He had just begun to run once more when a rabbit overtook him.
Stop, Thlaeli! What are you doing here? Where are you going?
Bigwig had been half expecting Campion to appear and had made up his mind to kill him if necessary. But now that he actually saw him at his side, disregarding the storm and the mud, self-possessed as he led his patrol, no more than 4 strong into the thick of a pack of desperate runaways, he could feel only what a pity it was that the two of them should be enemies, and how much he would have liked to have taken Campion with him out of Efrifa.
"Go away," he said. "Don't try to stop us, Campion. I don't want to hurt you."
He glanced to his other side.
"Blackivar, get the does to close up. If there are any stragglers, the patrol will jump on them."
"You'd do better to give in now,"
said Campion, still running beside him.
"I shan't let you out of my sight, wherever you go. There's an escape patrol on the way. I heard the signal. When they get here, you won't stand a chance. You're bleeding badly now."
"Curse you," cried Bigwig, striking at him. "You'll bleed too before I've done."
"Can I fight him, sir?"
said Blackavar.
"He won't beat me a second time."
"No," answered Bigwig. "He's only trying to delay us. Keep running."
"Flaily," cried the Thuthanang suddenly from behind him. "The general! The general! Oh, what shall we do?"
Bigwig looked back. It was indeed a sight to strike terror into the bravest heart. Woundwort had come through the arch ahead of his followers and was running toward them by himself, snarling with fury. Behind him came the patrol. In one quick glance, Bigwig recognized Chervil, Avens, and Granzel. With them were several more, including a heavy, savage-looking rabbit whom he guessed to be Vervain, the head of the council police. It crossed his mind that if he were to run, immediately and alone, they would probably let him go as he had come and feel glad to be so easily rid of him. Certainly the alternative was to be killed. At this moment, Blackavar spoke.
"Never mind, sir," he said. "You did your very best, and it nearly came off. We may even be able to kill one or two of them before it's finished. Some of these does can fight well when they're put to it."
Bigwig rubbed his nose quickly against Blackavar's mutilated ear and sat back on his haunches as Woundwort came up to them.
"You dirty little beast!" said Woundwort. "I hear you've attacked one of the council police and broken his leg. We'll settle with you here! There's no need to take you back to Ephrafa."
"You crack-brained slave driver," answered Bigwig. "I'd like to see you try."
"All right," said Woundwort. "That's enough! Who've we got? Vervain, Campion, put him down! The rest of you, start getting these doors back to the warren! The prisoner, you can leave to me."
"Frith sees you," cried Bigwig. "You're not fit to be called a rabbit. May Frith blast you and your foul owsler full of bullies." At that instant, a dazzling claw of lightning streaked down the length of the sky. The hedge and the distant trees seemed to leap forward in the brilliance of the flash. Immediately upon it came the thunder, a high, tearing noise, as though some huge thing were being ripped to pieces close above, which deepened and turned to enormous blows of dissolution. Then the rain fell like a waterfall. In a few seconds, the ground was covered with water, and over it, to a height of inches, rose a haze formed of a myriad minute splashes. Stupefied with the shock, unable even to move, the sodden rabbits crouched inert, almost pinned to the earth by the rain. A small voice spoke in Bigwig's mind.
"Your storm, Flaily Ra. Use it."
Gasping, he struggled up and pushed Blackavar with his foot.
"Come on," he said. "Get hold of Heisenthley. We're going."
He shook his head, trying to blink the rain out of his eyes. But it was no longer Blackavar who was crouching in front of him, but Woundwort, drenched in mud and rain, glaring and scrabbling in the silt with his great claws.
"I'll kill you myself," said Woundwort.
His long front teeth were bared like the fangs of a rat. Afraid, Bigwig watched him closely. He knew that Woundwort, with all the advantage of weight, would jump and try to close with him. He must try to avoid him and rely on his claws. He shifted his ground uneasily and felt himself slipping in the mud. Why did Woundwort not jump? Then he realized that Woundwort was no longer looking at him, but staring over his head at something beyond, something that he himself could not see. Suddenly, Woundwort leaped backward, and in the same moment, through the all-enveloping sound of the rain, there sounded a raucous clamour.
"Yak! Yak! Yak!"
Some big white thing was striking at Woundwort, who was cowering and guarding his head as best he could. Then it was gone, sailing upward and turning in the rain.
"Mr. Bigwig, is rabbits come?"
Sights and feelings swelled through Bigwig as though in a dream. The things that were happening no longer seemed connected by anything except his own dazed senses. He heard Kahar screaming as he dived again to attack Vervain. He felt the rain pouring cold into the open gash in his shoulder. Through the curtain of rain he glimpsed Woundwort dodging among his officers and urging them back into the ditch on the edge of the field. He saw Blackavar striking at Campion and Campion turning to run. Then someone beside him was saying, "Hello, Bigwig, 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 what do you want us to do?" It was Silver.
"Where's Hazel?"
he said.
Waiting at the boat. I said you're wounded. What?
Then get these does down there, said Bigwig. All was confusion. In ones and twos, the does, utterly bemused and scarcely able to move or to understand what was said to them, were urged into getting up and stumbling their way down the field. Other rabbits began to appear through the rain. Acorn, clearly frightened, but determined not to run. Dandelion, encouraging Pipkin. Speedwell and Hawkbit making toward Kihar, the only creature visible above the ground haze. Bigwig and Silver brought them together as best they could and made them understand that they were to help to get the does away.
"Go back to Blackberry, go back to Blackberry," Silver kept repeating. "I left three of our rabbits in different places to mark the way back," he explained to Bigwig. "Blackberry's first, then Bluebell, then Fiver. He's quite near the river."
"And there is Blackberry," said Bigwig.
"You did it then, Bigwig," said Blackberry, shivering. "Was it very bad? Good heavens, your shoulder."
"It's not finished yet," said Bigwig. "Has everyone passed you?"
"You're the last," said Blackberry. "Can we go? The storm's terrifying me."
Kahar alighted beside them.
"Mr. Bigwig," he said. "I fly on those damn rabbits, but they no run. They get in ditch. I no catch him in there. They coming all along beside you."
"They'll never give up," said Bigwig. "I warn you, Silver, they'll be at us before it's done. There's thick cover in the water meadow. They'll use that. Acorn, come back. Keep away from that ditch."
"Go back to Bluebell. Go back to Bluebell," repeated Silver, running from side to side. They found Bluebell by the hedge at the bottom of the field. He was white-eyed and ready to bolt.
"Silver," he said, "I saw a bunch of rabbits, strangers, ephrifants, I suppose, come out of the ditch over there and slip across into the water meadow. They're behind us now. One of them was the biggest rabbit I've ever seen."
"Then don't stay here," said Silver. "There goes Speedwell. And who's that? Acorn and two does with him. That's everyone. Come on, quick as you can."
It was only a short distance now to the river, but among the sodden patches of rushes, the bushes and sedge and deep puddles, they found it next to impossible to tell their direction. Expecting to be attacked at any moment, they scuttered and floundered through the undergrowth, finding here a doe and there one of their own rabbits and forcing them on. Without Kahar, they would certainly have lost all touch with each other and perhaps never reached the river. The gull kept flying backward and forward along the direct line to the bank, only alighting now and then to guide Bigwig toward some straggling doe whom he had spotted going the wrong way.
"Kihar," said Bigwig, as they waited for Thethuthanang to struggle up to them through a half-flattened clump of nettles. "Will you go and see whether you can spot the ephrifans? They can't be far away. But why haven't they attacked us? We're all so scattered that they could easily do us a lot of harm. I wonder what they're up to."
Kihar was back in a very short time.
"They hiding at bridge," he said. "All under bushes. I come down that big fella, he make for fight me."
"Did he?" said Bigwig. "The brute's got courage, I'll give him that."
"They think you got to cross river there, or else go all along bank. They not know him port. You near boat now?"
Fiver came running through the undergrowth.
"We've been able to get some of them on the boat, Bigwig," he said. "But most of them won't trust me. They just keep asking where you are."
Bigwig ran behind him and came out on the green path by the bank. All the surface of the river was winking and plopping in the rain. The level did not appear to have risen much as yet. The boat was just as he remembered it, one end against the bank, the other a little way out in the stream. On the raised part of the near end, Hazel was crouching, his ears drooping on either side of his head, and his flattened fur completely black with rain. He was holding the taut rope in his teeth. Acorn, Eisenflay, and two more were crouching near him on the wood, but the rest were huddled here and there along the bank. Blackberry was trying unsuccessfully to persuade them to get out on the boat.
"Hazel's afraid to leave the rope," he said to Bigwig. "Apparently he's bitten it very thin already. All these does will say is that you are their officer."
Bigwig turned to Thethuthanang. "This is the magic trick now," he said. "Get them over there, where Hazel's legs sitting. Do you see? All of them, quickly." Before she could reply, another doe gave a squeal of fear. A little way downstream, Campion and his patrol had emerged from the bushes and were coming up the path. From the opposite direction, Vervain, Chervil and Grounsel were approaching. The doe turned and darted for the undergrowth immediately behind her. Just as she reached it,
Wundwort himself appeared in her way, reared up, and dealt her a great, raking blow across the face. The doe turned once more and ran blindly across the path and onto the boat. Bigwig realized that since the moment when Kahar had attacked him in the field, Wundwort had not only retained control over his officers, but had actually made a plan and put it into effect. The storm and the difficult going had upset the fugitives and disorganized them. Wundwort, on the other hand, had taken his rabbits into the ditch and then made use of it to get them down to the water meadow, unexposed to further attack from Kahar. Once there, he must have gone straight for the plank bridge, which he evidently knew about, and set an ambush under cover. But as soon as he had grasped that for some reason the runaways were not making for the bridge after all, he had instantly sent Campion to make his way round through the undergrowth, regain the bank downstream, and cut them off. And Campion had done this without error or delay. Now Wundwort meant to fight them, here on the bank. He knew that Kahar could not be everywhere, and that the bushes and undergrowth provided enough cover, at a pinch, to dodge him. It was true that the other side had twice his numbers, but most of them were afraid of him, and none was a trained Efrifan officer. Now that he had them pinned against the river, he would split them up and kill as many as possible. The rest could run away and come to grief as they might. Bigwig began to understand why Wundwort's officers followed him and fought for him as they did. "He's not like a rabbit at all," he thought. "Flight's the last thing he ever thinks of. If I'd known 3 nights ago what I know now, I don't believe I'd ever have gone into Ephrathah. I suppose he hasn't realized about the boat, too. It wouldn't surprise me." He dashed across the grass and jumped on the planking beside Hazel. The appearance of Wundwort had achieved what Blackberry and Fiver could not. Every one of the does ran from the bank to the boat. Blackberry and Fiver ran with them. Wundwort, following them close, reached the edge of the bank and came face to face with Bigwig. As he stood his ground, Bigwig could hear Blackberry just behind him, speaking urgently to Hazel.
"Dandelion's not here," said Blackberry. "He's the only one."
Hazel spoke for the first time.
"We shall have to leave him," he answered. "It's a shame, but these fellows will be at us in a moment, and we can't stop them."
Bigwig spoke without taking his eyes from Wundwort.
"Just a few more moments, Hazel," he said. "I'll kick them off. We can't leave Dandelion."
Wundwort sneered up at him.
"I trusted you, Thleli," he said. "You can trust me now! You'll either go into the river or be torn to pieces here. The whole lot of you! There's nowhere left to run!"
Bigwig had caught sight of Dandelion, looking out of the undergrowth opposite. He was plainly at a loss.
"Groundel! Vervain!" said Wundwort. "Come over here beside me. When I give the word, we'll go straight into them. As for that bird, it's not dangerous."
"There it is!" cried Bigwig.
Wundwort looked up quickly and leaped back. Dandelion shot out of the bushes, crossed the path in a flash, and was on the boat beside Hazel. In the same moment, the rope parted, and immediately the little punt began to move along the bank in the steady current. When it had gone a few yards, the stern swung slowly outward until it was broadside onto the stream. In this position, it drifted to the middle of the river and into the southward bend. Looking back, the last thing Bigwig saw was the face of General Wundwort staring out of the gap in the willow herb where the boat had lain. It reminded him of the kestrel on Watership Down, which had pounced into the mouth of the hole and missed the mouse.
Part 4. Hazelrar. Chapter 39. The Bridges. Boatmen dance, boatmen sing. Boatmen do most anything. Dance, boatmen, dance. Dance all night till the broad daylight. Go home with the girls in the morning. Hey-ho, boatmen row, sailing down the river on the Ohio. American Folk Song. On almost any other river, Blackberry's plan would not have worked. The punt would not have left the bank, or, if it had, would have run aground or been fouled by weeds or some other obstruction. But here, on the test, there were no submerged branches and no gravel spits or beds of weed above the surface at all. From bank to bank, the current, regular and unvaried, flowed as fast as a man strolling. The punt slipped downstream smoothly, without any alteration of the speed which it had gained within a few yards of leaving the bank. Most of the rabbits had very little idea of what was happening. The Effrophon does had never seen a river, and it would certainly have been beyond Pipkin or Hawkbit to explain to them that they were on a boat. They, and nearly all the others, had simply trusted Hazel and done as they were told. But all, bucks and does alike, realized that Woundwort and his followers had vanished. Wearied by all they had gone through, the sodden rabbits crouched without talking, incapable of any feeling but a dull relief, and without even the energy to wonder what was going to happen next. That they should feel any relief, dull or otherwise, was remarkable in the circumstances, and showed both how little they understood their situation and how much fear Woundwort could inspire, for their escape from him seemed to be their only good fortune. The rain was still falling. Already so wet that they no longer felt it, they were nevertheless shivering with cold and weighted with their drenched fur. The punt was holding over half an inch of rainwater. There was one small, slatted floorboard, and this was floating. Some of the rabbits, in the first confusion of boarding the punt, had found themselves in this water. But now all had got clear of it, most either to bows or stern, though Thethuthunang and Speedwell were hunched on the narrow thwart amidships. In addition to their discomfort, they were exposed and helpless. Finally, there was no way of controlling the punt, and they did not know where they were going. But these last were troubles beyond the understanding of everyone but Hazel, Fiver, and Blackberry. Bigwig had collapsed beside Hazel and lay on his side, exhausted. The feverish courage which had brought him from Ephrafa to the river had gone, and his wounded shoulder had begun to hurt badly. In spite of the rain and the throbbing pulse down his foreleg, he felt ready to sleep where he was, stretched upon the planking. He opened his eyes and looked up at Hazel.
"I couldn't do it again, Hazel-Ra," he said.
"You haven't got to," replied Hazel.
"It was touch and go, you know," said Bigwig. "A chance in a thousand."
"Our children's children will hear a good story," answered Hazel, quoting a rabbit proverb. "How did you get that wound? It's a nasty one."
"I fought a member of the council police," said Bigwig.
"A what?"
The term Auslafa was unknown to Hazel. "A dirty little beast like Hafsa," said Bigwig.
"Did you beat him?"
"Oh, yes, or I shouldn't be here. I should think he'll stop running. I say, Hazel-Ra, we've got the does. What's going to happen now?"
"I don't know," said Hazel. "We need one of these clever rabbits to tell us. And Kahar, where's he gone? He's supposed to know about this thing we're sitting on."
Dandelion, crouching beside Hazel, got up at the mention of clever rabbits, made his way across the puddled floor, and returned with Blackberry and Fiver.
"We're all wondering what to do next," said Hazel.
"Well," said Blackberry, "I suppose we shall drift into the bank before long, and then we can get out and find cover. There's no harm, though, in going a good long way from those friends of Bigwig's."
"There is," said Hazel. "We're stuck here in full view and we can't run. If a man sees us, we're in trouble."
"Men don't like rain," said Blackberry. "Neither do I, if it comes to that. But it makes us safer just now."
At this moment, Eisenfley, sitting just behind him, started and looked up.
"Excuse me, sir, for interrupting you,"
she said, as though speaking to an officer in Ephrafa.
"But the bird, the white bird, it's coming toward us."
Kahar came flying up the river through the rain and alighted on the narrow side of the punt. The does nearest to him backed away nervously.
"Mr. Hazel," he said, "bridge come. You see him bridge?"
It had not occurred to any of the rabbits that they were floating beside the path up which they had come earlier that evening before the storm broke. They were on the opposite side of the hedge of plants along the bank, and the whole river looked different. But now they saw, not far ahead,
the bridge which they had crossed when they first came to the test 4 nights before. This they recognized at once, for it looked the same as it had from the back.
"Maybe you go under him, maybe not," said Kihar. "But you sit there, he's trouble."
The bridge stretched from bank to bank between two low abutments. It was not arched. Its underside, made of iron girders, was perfectly straight, parallel with the surface and about 8 inches above it. Just in time, Hazel saw what Kihar meant. If the punt did pass under the bridge without sticking, it would do so by no more than a claw's breadth. Any creature above the level of the sides would be struck and perhaps knocked into the river. He scuttered through the warm bilge water to the other end and pushed his way up among the wet, crowded rabbits.
"Get down in the bottom! Get down in the bottom!" he said. "Silver, Hawkbit, all of you, never mind the water. You and you, what's your name? Oh, Blackavar, is it? Get everyone into the bottom, be quick!"
Like Bigwig, he found that the Efrafin rabbits obeyed him at once. He saw Kihar fly up from his perch and disappear over the wooden rails. The concrete abutments projected from each bank, so that the narrowed river ran slightly faster under the bridge. The punt had been drifting broadside on, but now one end swung forward, so that Hazel lost his bearings and found that he was no longer looking at the bridge, but at the bank. As he hesitated, the bridge seemed to come at him in a dark mass, like snow sliding from a bough. He pressed himself into the bilge. There was a squeal, and a rabbit tumbled on top of him. Then a heavy blow vibrated along the length of the punt, and its smooth movement was checked. This was followed by a hollow sound of scraping. It grew dark, and a roof appeared, very low above him. For a moment, Hazel had the vague idea that he was underground. Then the roof vanished. The punt was gliding on, and he heard Kihar calling. They were below the bridge and still drifting downstream. The rabbit who had fallen on him was Acorn. He had been struck by the bridge, and the blow had sent him flying. However, though dazed and bruised, he seemed to have escaped injury.
"I wasn't quick enough, Hazelrar," he said. "I'd better go to Ephrathah for a bit."
"You'd be wasted," said Hazel. "But I'm afraid there's someone at the other end who hasn't been so lucky." One of the does had held back from the bilge water, and the upstream girder under the bridge had caught her across the back. It was plain that she was injured, but how badly, Hazel could not tell. He saw Hyacinth lay beside her, and it seemed to him that since there was nothing he could do to help, it would probably be best to let them alone. He looked round at his bedraggled, shivering comrades, and then at Kihar, spruce and brisk on the stern.
"We ought to get back on the bank, Kihar," he said. "How can we do it? Rabbits weren't meant for this, you know."
"You not stop boat, but again he's not a bridge more. He stop him."
There was nothing to be done but wait. They drifted on and came to a second bend, where the river curved westward. The current did not slacken, and the punt came round the bend almost in the middle of the stream, revolving as it did so. The rabbits had been frightened by what had happened to Acorn and to the doe, and remained squatting miserably, half in and half out of the bilge. Hazel crept back to the raised bow and looked ahead. The river broadened and the current slackened. He realized that they had begun to drift more slowly. The nearer bank was high and the trees stood close and thick, but on the further bank the ground was low and open. Grassy, it stretched away, smooth as the moon gallops on Watership Down. Hazel hoped that they might somehow drop out of the current and reach that side, but the punt moved quietly on, down the very centre of the broad pool. The open bank slipped by, and now the trees towered on both sides. Downstream, the pool was closed by the second bridge, of which Kihar had spoken. It was old, built of darkened bricks. Ivy trailed over it, and the valerian and creeping mauve toadflax. Well out from either bank stood 4 low arches, scarcely more than culverts, each filled by the stream to within a foot of the apex. Through them, thin segments of daylight showed from the downstream side. The piers did not project, but against each lay a little accumulation of flotsam, from which driftweed and sticks continually broke away to be carried through the bridge.
It was plain that the punt would drift against the bridge and be held there. As it approached, Hazel dropped back into the bilge water. But this time, there was no need. Broadside on, the punt struck gently against two of the piers and stopped, pinned squarely across the mouth of one of the central culverts. It could go no further. They had floated not quite half a mile in just over 15 minutes. Hazel put his forepaws on the low side and looked gingerly over, upstream. Immediately below, a shallow ripple spread all along the waterline, where the current met the woodwork. It was too far to jump to the shore, and both banks were steep. He turned and looked upward. The brickwork was sheer, with a projecting course halfway between him and the parapet. There was no scrambling up that.
"What's to be done, Blackberry?"
he asked, making his way to the bolt fixed on the bow with its ragged remnant of painter.
"You got us on this thing. How do we get off?"
"I don't know, Hazelra," replied Blackberry. "Of all the ways we could finish up, I never thought of this. It looks as though we'll have to swim."
"Swim?" said Silver. "I don't fancy it, Hazelra. I know it's no distance, but look at those banks. The current would take us down before we could get out, and that means into one of these holes under the bridge."
Hazel tried to look through the arch. There was very little to be seen. The dark tunnel was not long, perhaps not much longer than the punt itself. The water looked smooth. There seemed to be no obstructions, and there was room for the head of a swimming animal between the surface of the water and the apex of the arch. But the segment was so narrow that it was impossible to see exactly what lay on the other side of the bridge. The light was failing. Water, green leaves, moving reflections of leaves, the splashing of the raindrops, and some curious thing that appeared to be standing in the water and to be made of vertical grey lines. These were all that could be made out. The rain echoed dismally up the culvert. The hard, ringing noise from under the soffit, so much unlike any sound to be heard in an earth tunnel, was disturbing. Hazel returned to Blackberry and Silver.
"This is as bad a fix as we've been in," he said. "We can't stay here, but I can't see any way out."
Kihar appeared on the parapet above them, flapped the rain out of his wings, and dropped down to the punt.
"Is finished, boat," he said. "No wait more."
"But how can we get to the bank, Kihar?"
said Hazel.
The gull was surprised.
"Dog swim, rat swim, you no swim."
"Yes, we can swim, as long as it's not very far. But the banks are too steep for us, Kihar. We wouldn't be able to stop the current taking us down one of these tunnels, and we don't know what's at the other end."
"Is good. You get out fine."
Hazel felt at a loss. What exactly was he to understand from this? Kihar was not a rabbit. Whatever the big water was like, it must be worse than this, and Kihar was used to it. He never said much in any case, and what he did say was always restricted to the simplest, since he spoke no Lapang. He was doing them a good turn because they had saved his life, but as Hazel knew, he could not help despising them for timid, helpless, stay-at-home creatures who could not fly. He was often impatient. Did he mean that he had looked at the river and considered it as if he were a rabbit? That there was slack water immediately below the bridge, with a low, shelving bank where they could get out easily? That seemed too much to hope for. Or did he simply mean that they had better hurry up and take a chance on being able to do what he himself could do without difficulty? This seemed more likely. Suppose one of them did jump out of the boat and go down with the current. What would that tell the others if he did not come back? Poor Hazel looked about him. Silver was licking Bigwig's wounded shoulder. Blackberry was fidgeting on and off the thwart, strung up, able to feel only too clearly all that Hazel felt himself. As he still hesitated, Kihar let out a squawk.
"Yak! Damn rabbits, no good! What I do, I show you!"
He tumbled clumsily off the raised bow. There was no gap between the punt and the dark mouth of the culvert. Sitting low in the water like a mallard, he floated into the tunnel and vanished. Peering after him, Hazel could at first see nothing. Then he made out Kahar's shape, black against the light, at the far end. It floated into daylight, turned sideways, and passed out of the restricted view.
"What does that prove?"
said Blackberry, his teeth chattering.
"He may have flown off the surface, or put his great webbed feet down. It's not he that's soaked through and shivering and twice as heavy with wet fur."
Kahar reappeared on the parapet above.
"You go now," he said shortly.
Still the wretched Hazel hung back. His leg had begun to hurt again. The sight of Bigwig, Bigwig of all rabbits, at the end of his tether, half unconscious, playing no part in this desperate exploit, lowered his courage still more. He knew that he had not got it in him to jump into the water. The horrible situation was beyond him. He stumbled on the slippery planking, and as he sat up, found Fiver beside him.
"I'll go, Hazel," said Fiver quietly. "I think it'll be all right."
He put his front paws on the edge of the bow. Then, on the instant, all the rabbits froze motionless. One of the does stamped on the puddled floor of the punt. From above came the sounds of approaching footsteps and men's voices and the smell of a burning white stick. Kahar flew away. Not a rabbit moved. The footsteps grew nearer, the voices louder. They were on the bridge above, no further away than the height of a hedge. Every one of the rabbits was seized by the instinct to run, to go underground. Hazel saw Heisenflay looking at him and returned her stare, willing her, with all his might, to keep still. The voices, the smell of men's sweat, of leather, of white sticks, the pain in his leg, the damp, chuckling tunnel at his very ear. He had known them all before. How could the men not see him? They must see him. He was lying at their feet. He was wounded. They were coming to pick him up. Then the sounds and smells were receding into the distance. The thudding of the footsteps diminished. The men had crossed the bridge without looking over the parapet. They were gone. Hazel came too.
"That settles it," he said. "Everyone's got to swim. Come on, Bluebell. You say you're a water rabbit. Follow me."
He got on the thwart and went along it to the side. But it was Pipkin that he found next to him.
"Quick, Hazelra," said Pipkin, twitching and trembling. "I'll come too. Only be quick."
Hazel shut his eyes and fell over the side into the water. As in the Enborn, there was an instant shock of cold. But more than this, and at once, he felt the pull of the current. He was being drawn away by a force like a high wind, yet smooth and silent. He was drifting helplessly down a suffocating cold run, with no hold for his feet. Full of fear, he paddled and struggled, got his head up and took a breath, scrabbled his claws against rough bricks underwater, and lost them again as he was dragged on. Then the current slackened, the run vanished, the dark became light, and there were leaves and sky above him once more. Still struggling, he fetched up against something hard, bumped off it, struck it again, and then for a moment touched soft ground. He floundered forward and found that he was dragging himself through liquid mud. He was out on a clammy bank. He lay panting for several moments and then wiped his face and opened his eyes. The first thing he saw was Pipkin, plastered with mud, crawling to the bank a few feet away. Full of elation and confidence, all his terrors forgotten, Hazel crawled over to Pipkin, and together they slipped into the undergrowth. He said nothing, and Pipkin did not seem to expect him to speak. From the shelter of a clump of purple loosestrife, they looked back at the river. The water came out from the bridge into a second pool. All round, on both banks, trees and undergrowth grew close. There was a kind of swamp here, and it was hard to tell where water ended and woodland began. Plants grew in clumps both in and out of the muddy shallows. The bottom was covered with fine silt and mud that was half water, and in this the two rabbits had made furrows as they dragged themselves to shore. Running diagonally across the pool, from the brickwork of the bridge near the opposite bank, to a point a little below them on their own side, was a grating of thin vertical iron rods. In the cutting season, the river weed, drifting in tangled mats from the fishing reaches above, was held against this grating and raked out of the pool by men in waders, who piled it to be used as compost. The left bank was a great rubbish heap of rotting weed among the trees. It was a green, rank-smelling place, humid and enclosed.
"Good old Kahar," said Hazel, gazing with satisfaction round the fetid solitude. "I should have trusted him."
As he spoke, a third rabbit came swimming out from under the bridge. The sight of him, struggling in the current like a fly in a spider's web, filled them both with fear. To watch another in danger can be almost as bad as sharing it. The rabbit fetched up against the grating, drifted a little way along it, found the bottom, and crawled out of the turbid water. It was Blackavar. He lay on his side and seemed unaware of Hazel and Pipkin when they came up to him. After a little while, however, he began to cough, vomited some water, and sat up.
"Are you all right?" asked Hazel.
"More or less," said Blackavar. "But have we got to do much more tonight, sir? I'm very tired."
"No, you can rest here," said Hazel. "But why did you risk it on your own? We might already have gone under for all you knew."
"I thought you gave an order," replied Blackavar.
"I see," said Hazel. "Well, at that rate, you're going to find us a sloppy lot, I'm afraid. Was there anyone else who looked like coming when you jumped in?"
"I think they're a bit nervous," answered Blackavar. "You can't blame them."
"No, but the trouble is that anything can happen," said Hazel, fretting. "They may all go tharn sitting there. The men may come back. If only we could tell them it's all right."
"I think we can, sir," said Blackavar. "Unless I'm wrong, it's only a matter of slipping up the bank there and down the other side. Shall I go?"
Hazel was disconcerted. From what he had gathered, this was a disgraced prisoner from Ephrafa, not even a member of the Ausla, apparently, and he had just said that he felt exhausted. He was going to take some living up to.
"We'll both go," he said. "Cleru, can you stay here and keep a lookout? With any luck, they'll start coming through to you. Help them if you can."
Hazel and Blackavar slipped through the dripping undergrowth. The grass track which crossed the bridge ran above them, at the top of a steep bank. They climbed the bank and looked out cautiously from the long grass at the verge. The track was empty, and there was nothing to be heard or smelled. They crossed it and reached the end of the bridge on the upstream side. Here the bank dropped almost sheer to the river, some 6 feet below. Blackavar scrambled down without hesitation, but Hazel followed more slowly. Just above the bridge, between it and a thorn bush upstream, was a ledge of turf which overhung the water. Out in the river, a few feet away, the punt lay against the weedy piers.
"Silver," said Hazel. "Fiver! Come on, get them into the water. It's all right below the bridge. Get the does in first if you can. There's no time to lose. The men may come back."
It was no easy matter to rouse the torpid, bewildered does and make them understand what they had to do. Silver went from one to another. Dandelion, as soon as he saw Hazel on the bank, went at once to the bow and plunged in. Speedwell followed, but as Fiver was about to go, Silver stopped him.
"If all our books go, Hazel," he said, "the does will be left alone, and I don't think they'll manage it."
"They'll obey Thlaeli, sir,"
said Blackavar, before Hazel could reply.
"I think he's the one to get them started."
Bigwig was still lying in the bilge water, in the place he had taken up when they came to the first bridge. He seemed to be asleep, but when Silver nuzzled him, he raised his head and looked about in a dazed manner.
"Oh, hello, Silver," he said. "I'm afraid this shoulder of mine's going to be a bother. I feel awfully cold, too. Where's Hazel?"
Silver explained. Bigwig got up with difficulty, and they saw that he was still bleeding. He limped to the thwart and climbed on it.
"Hazel Thlay," he said. "Your friends can't be any wetter, so we'll get them to jump in now. One by one, don't you think? Then there'll be no risk of them scratching or hurting each other as they swim."
In spite of what Blackavar had said, it was a long time before everyone had left the boat. There were, in fact, 10 does altogether, though none of the rabbits knew the number,
and although one or two responded to Bigwig's patient urging, several were so much exhausted that they remained huddled where they were, or looked stupidly at the water until others were brought to take their place. From time to time, Bigwig would ask one of the bucks to give a lead, and in this way, Acorn, Hawkbit, and Bluebell all scrambled over the side. The injured